What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devinder Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
It's 2025, and we're going to be talking about CES. Also joining us is podcast producer Ben Elman. Hey, Ben.
I'm looking forward to getting a lot of, or hearing, listening to a lot of floor audio.
Oh, man, so much floor audio. But yeah, this is going to be our CES 2025 preview. I cannot believe this thing is just a couple days away. We have been dealing with, research and talking to companies and stuff and getting prepped for CES. Sherlyn, how do you feel about this, like jumping right back into CES?
I did not realize quite literally how like short of a window between New Year's Day and leaving for Vegas was, because I mean, transparency, some of us had to work for the holiday week. So I was working through from Christmas through New Year's, and we had breaks obviously on the weekends and like on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. So I was like, you know, those will be fine. But I was like, not prepared for the whole, like, I'm not getting a break before flying off for nonstop work for a week situation that I'm coming up on. So I might try
Sherlyn, you're good about telling me to take a break. And I feel like, yeah, somebody
I'm not good
like,
about
hey,
telling anyone else,
hey,
myself
you,
to
take a break. Because it turns out, we were leaving for CS, this Saturday, which is the 4th. Mm-hmm. And then January 1st, it's just a couple days before the 4th. So you do the math.
Wednesday,
There's just not much time to rest, folks. So anyway, we'll talk about this and everything going to CS. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. And also, we'll typically be doing a live stream Thursday mornings around 11 a.m. Eastern. We won't be doing it next week because we will be at CES and I don't have my whole desktop there. But, you know, stay tuned for a lot of... We will have audio from the show. We will have a couple episodes at CES, yeah.
And following Engadget on TikTok, Instagram, etc., wherever we get live videos, we'll try to do a lot of social media videos.
A lot of social. So I'm sure you're wiped and you can't. You just want this whole thing to be over, Sherlyn. But we could talk about a couple of things that we're expecting. So we have done a lot of like run up coverage getting into CES, and one of the things I really love collaborating on is our. Basically, like our preview of what we expect to see at the show. And this year, we've got a like whole bunch of different things. Got bendable 5K OLEDs from LG. Mm-hmm. Personally, on my end, I know we're going to be talking to AMD and NVIDIA about whatever they've got for new video cards. And that's
every
gonna,
year
like,
they
dominate.
Do too, yeah.
Every year they do, but this is like a particularly big year because it's the generational leap for NVIDIA. So everyone is like, oh, what have you got cooking here? More AI PCs, a whole bunch of stuff. What is the most interesting thing to you, Sherlyn, getting into CES?
So I will throw in to what you've already kind of recounted for us a couple of things that I know are coming. So Deepbro9 in the chat was like AI stuff, which is yes. You can just imagine every section of CES will have AI repeated ad nauseum. Personally, though, I've noticed this trend lately since the iPhone 14 or so allowed people to do emergency SOS via satellite, that like at CES 2024, Qualcomm was there to launch Snapdragon Satellite. Now, that never really took off because you couldn't find enough OEMs to support the platform. But we started to see a lot of like Garmin made an in-reach SOS satellite messenger type of device. We're going to see a lot of people, I think, try to get us a means to connect to satellites for more communications. Now, whether that's a good or bad thing, I don't personally know. Because should we be clogging up the airways even more? Should we be launching more satellites the way Amazon and some other companies are? I don't know.
I don't know if that's going to stop, but the whole appeal was like, yeah, emergency communication,
yeah.
Right? You're
if it's stuck only, somewhere without and if cellular. It remains yeah. emergency, I think I'm fine with that. And I think that seems to be the case. But, you know, I personally think we're going to see more of that. That's one of that was like my main prediction for our CES preview roundup piece, which we are updating with things that are already slowly getting announced by like LG. You said that bendable 5K OLED, that's a gaming monitor that LG already announced. I'm going to update that piece soon. Because LG also slapped a 27-inch monitor onto a microwave.
I saw that story. It's like, yeah, microwave with a screen. LG is getting a little crazy at this point, and at some points, They're not as desperate a company as like Samsung is. Like Samsung is, here is a 55-inch, you know, monitor for your desk, and also it can go into portrait mode. And I had monster in my office once, and it was like, it took two or three people to like set it up in the first place. So I don't know. I've got a little affinity for LG. I actually just listen. We're like planning a whole kitchen remodel thing, so I'm in like, let me look at those LG appliances. Let me look at that LG fridge that has the little window door. And I will soon be a proud owner of the LG window fridge. So, you know, I like them. I like them. They do some things.
I think, you know, things that are at CES, a lot of people, like, you know, again, in our chat on the live stream, people are saying, Deepo9, for example, say, love the crazy stuff CES shows off that never goes anywhere. And then, in addition to the like video cards that we expect NVIDIA and AMD to probably show off, I think there's also a lot of home appliances, like you're talking about the LG fridge, the TVs and whatnot. For me, going to CES every year has felt kind of like home shopping for furniture I can never afford, or like appliances I can never afford. And then just fantasizing about the day they trickle down. So like, I like the Samsung bespoke fridges. They look great.
Never a Samsung fridge, Shalyn. Never a Samsung appliance. Listen, folks, if you don't even care about our CES talk and you just want like general consumer advice, never buy Samsung appliance. Never.
MDC in the chat agrees with you. LG appliances are solid.
Yeah. They have higher reliability ratings. It's a whole thing. But like Samsung has those bespoke fridges look really cool.
They look great.
Samsung does like cool design, but reliability is garbage, like absolute garbage. And you don't want that for a fridge or washer dryer or whatever. Except for TVs are good.
I aspire to like an LG washer dryer. I saw like a combo that I wanted to get. And now it's just like, what? This much money? I will use my GE combo. It's fine.
You will use your GE. Yeah, I am. I guess because I've been reporting on this stuff for a while. So all of LG stuff works under their ThinQ.
I was going to ask if ThinQ was still a thing. Yeah.
ThinQ is still a thing. So, like, my washer and dryer on ThinQ, and I guess I will have a fridge that's on ThinQ soon. So, that's fun. But okay, you brought up the LG bending display. We saw some TV news already. I mean, yeah, we kind of have a sense of like what's going to be announced as well. Has anything, just from the stories that have dropped at this point, because we've been rolling some CES stories basically for the past couple weeks, has anything like really piqued your interest at this point?
Okay, I can tell you this. Hyundai Mobis, or Hyundai, I think the Mobis is the R&D division or something of Hyundai. And you guys say Hyundai, I say Hyundai. So anyway, the car company.
I think you are
you
correct.
You just want to be British.
I think, no, Shirley, I think I am correct. Well, in Asia, that's, we said Hyundai. Anyway.
Yeah, sure.
Everyone I have ever like talked about cars with, which I don't talk about cars very often because I don't know very much about cars, but they will also say Hyundai, probably because it's like an enthusiast thing. You know, the people who have been to the capital of Hungary call it Budapest.
Yes, there is that. But even Hyundai of America does not say Hyundai. They say Hyundai. So it is a regional thing, probably. It's a whole thing.
So Hyundai Mobis announced that they will have a holographic windshield display at CES 2025. I thought that was really cool. I was like, wow, we really need all these like Black Mirror-esque things really getting in the way.
We definitely want more
distractions
right in front of our drivers. That's great. That's great.
So that really piqued my interest. And again, when I was updating our preview piece, I included the picture because they included in their press release a picture of their booth. They were like, come check it out at our booth at CES 2025. And I was like, oh, okay. This thing does look futuristic. However, really, that's what you're going to give us is a picture of a booth? Like, all right, I guess.
I see if you zoom into the picture of the booth, you kind of get see a picture of it. But I'm like, guys, your job is to sell me on this platform. From what I see, it actually looks like it's because this car or this like interface doesn't have like normal screens.
Right.
So like a lot of the like speedometer stuff is going to be up on the windshield, which has been the dream of car designers.
It's got no dashboard screen, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, like none of those console screens. And that's kind of cool. I kind of worry, like, sometimes you got to have, like, some information out of the, like, line of sight of driving.
Yes.
My car has, like, a little heads-up display. It's just, like, speed. Speed and, hey, you're going too fast. You're going to hit that car in front of you. So, like, those are good alerts. Beyond that, it's like, We are kind of losing sight too. Yeah, I don't know how much you care about car stuff, Sherlyn, but the trend towards losing physical switches
and buttons and everything
is bad. And everyone's doing it.
It's not just the switches, right? It's also like, I mean, we're replacing rear view mirrors with cameras and screens. One, okay, great. Latency, lovely. Number two, apparently we're also getting rid of like rear windows altogether, like in some other cars that I've seen. And then some of them are replacing with screens. There's some of them are just not having one. I think they're doing a full sunroof maybe but don't you need to lick? Anyway. And then, yeah, side mirrors are another thing that might slowly get replaced. And I think these are all not
great. Side cameras kind of make sense because, like, if you have that camera feed, like Kia does this already, then you can put that little camera feed, like, right in front of you.
Yeah, it can watch your blind spot for you, right?
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. But, yeah, rear window stuff, rear cameras in general, like, when I was testing the Kia EV9, it had the, like, rear view mirror that you could flip to just directly outside the trunk, basically. And it's so lower level, freaky. Yeah. Like a lower, just like a complete camera view of the back. And it feels wrong. Like it just feels like, ooh, I'm really used to seeing the distance of the car and kind of measuring like where the rear car is. And to see it just like right up there actually really was distracting to me while I was driving. So there's a lot of weird stuff happening now. I think the biggest problem though is like losing buttons. Volvo, you know, they showed off the EX90 throughout this year. I'm Volvo pilled at this point, but even that company is like, it's going to be a big screen and we're losing a lot of the buttons. And the Volvo faithful and the people who love this brand are like, this is a big mistake. I kind of miss all this stuff. And I think we're probably going to step back because in terms of usability, just moving to a screen is bad. You can't just be like fishing around an iPad screen while you're like driving, right? But if there was a knob, you kind of knew where it was and you had to like.
Yeah, you don't even need to look at it, but like you need to pay attention when you're menu diving every single time. What if your finger goes in the slightly wrong place?
It's really dumb. Until voice commands are like perfect, then yes, I totally agree with you, Ben. I should talk about the AMD and NVIDIA stuff. We have been hinting at it for a while. We don't have any details on this, but we definitely expect to see, AMD's next generation Radeon GPUs. Mm-hmm. I think those will be like the 8000 series most likely. And we'll definitely be seeing the NVIDIA RTX 5000 series GPUs. And those are going to be big deals. Like it's been several years since the RTX 4000 cards. Those were fantastic, but also incredibly expensive. They went upwards of $1,500. Even the mid-range cards were like $700, $800. NVIDIA, with the past several generations of video cards, has really like been the one pumping prices way, way up. Understandably, because the technology has gotten... Those chips are crazy complex, so I kind of understand why it's going where it is. But also, I miss the days of like really good $200, $300 video cards. That's something Intel, I just reviewed the latest Intel Arc GPU. Like they have a $250 GPU that does pretty decently for 1080p and 1440p. But NVIDIA is just like, they are on such a roll right now. Like their valuation is exploding because of AI, because of so many AI servers use their chips.
And this is the one place at CES where all of the talk about AI is actually going to mean something.
Well, I mean, for NVIDIA, it just means like, hey, AI, the power of AI in your machine. And I think that's what a lot of people are going to be talking about right now. NVIDIA users, GPU users kind of know this already. Like you could do a lot with an RTX GPU. If you do any sort of like video encoding or media encoding, you throw that work to the GPU, it'll be done a lot faster. I think they're going to make a bigger play for your video card is an AI enablement kind of device. So yeah, expect that to be a big part of the story. Does this matter at all to you, Sherlyn, like in terms of how you look at computing?
Not really, because I think I think there's promise and power and overall performance, but in the sort of way that I've been so jaded by AI, I've been so like everything is hyped and it's not actually useful in my opinion, that like that aspect of it doesn't appeal to me at all. I think we are still trying to find decent use cases for AI. I think what the NVIDIA and AMD take on it is like bringing more of those like processing that's usually like delegated to cloud processing onto on-device maybe a bit more. That is interesting. And then giving more power to people to do their own like modeling, I guess, would be interesting to see what that does. But I am at a stage in 2025 day two, where I'm like, maybe we don't need to give everyone control over everything. We don't need to like start, you know, I feel as if like too many people have been on social media, like becoming influencers.
the ultimate, democratization of media.
Right, that's where I'm tired. I'm like, generally good for democracy, not happy about influencer culture.
Yeah, influencer, it's the downfall of us all. What's up?
So can the two of you let me know if I am just talking buzzword nonsense or if I have a point here? It seems like people are looking for an AI killer app where actually we need a, like, AI utility ecosystem. The, like, little things that make your life better that use AI are still not built out enough for people to get excited, especially the average person to get really excited about buying one of these incredibly expensive, super fast new GPUs.
I mean, it's the AI stuff will not be the main selling point for GPUs. It'll be like, hey, ray tracing is so much better. The hardcore gamers are all about these GPUs. But the AI story in general, when it comes to like AI PCs and everything, yeah, I think that's what we're seeing. Like our conversation about what happened in 2024 was that it feels like the hype of AI has kind of died down a bit. I think,
I hope so.
Yeah, all these companies have spent billions of dollars on this technology. And I think they have been desperate to prove that, hey, this is worth something. This is useful. But I think as a public, you can kind of feel like you're just kind of forcing this on me, aren't you? You really want to make fetch happen here. And that's kind of what it feels like. It doesn't feel organic. It's not like, oh my God, have you seen the iPhone? Have you seen like what this thing can do and how and you can imagine in your head how it'll transform your life. And now they're like, well, what if you just typed in a phrase in the box and you got a picture? And it looks realistic. Like, yeah.
It looks kind of realistic.
It looks okay.
Yeah, a little weird.
Isn't this the future? What if I could describe a video scene and it makes a video for you? Great.
But the video is like kind of horrifying in its own way and like looks even worse than like corporate stock B-roll.
It looks so. There are a lot of questions that are answered. And I think these companies are so, they're so desperate to like produce a product and produce something that people will desire somehow, but they have lost sight of like what we kind of lose and what the downsides of what something, you know, from AI will be. I'm sure the chat will have some thoughts on this. So this is going to be to me, this is the year of AI reckoning, Ben.
Yeah.
To all of what you're saying.
So Dev, I think that you know better, and that if you say like most of the keynote on like the GPUs are going to be talking about actual like graphics performance, that would be amazing, because my assumption was NVIDIA was going to talk all about like, you know, glorious AI future, and then also say, oh yeah, I guess you could play video games with this too.
I mean, they know their core market is the thing. Like their core market, at least for these GPUs, is like, hey, the gamers want the gaming stuff. They've already launched a version of this, the whatever the technology is going to be in the new GPUs. They've launched that, I believe, already for the server market and the compute market. So those folks are kind of working with a different version of this technology, and they all kind of intersect in a while. After a while, and I think NVIDIA is going to reframe the way people think of their GPUs. But right now, I think they just want to excite the gamers. The people who will just like won't stop and will drop $2,000 on a, you know, RTX 5090 or whatever. They want to hit those people first. They want to get the excitement. That's something AMD can't quite do. So NVIDIA kind of knows that having that status is good for them. And then everything kind of follows after that, I'd say. That is kind of what we're expecting. Keep an eye on gadget.com because we have a lot of stories coming in too about CS and some early embargoes as well. So stay tuned. Check out the site. All right, that's enough of CS for now. We did want to take a bit of a look back to 2024. Last episode, we talked about the biggest winners of the year. And now we have a better idea of the biggest losers. Is there anything you want to like really highlight here, Shalyn?
Yeah. This was my last minute addition because I think I held back on adding this to the final list because it feels like it feeds into the part of the discourse around like AI was the big thing, right? But Google search specifically, with having added AI overviews this year and expanding it, right, to so many other places and countries. Oh my God, I think Google search plus AI overviews, it was one of the big losers of 2024 because it just made it impossible to get the result you want just without scrolling to begin with. And number two, as I wrote my blurb, the more I was like, wait a minute, You can't even trust like the top 20 things you see on Google, because not only do they have their top boxes and their AI overviews, you can pay to put your stuff in the top thing. So it's not
You really can't trust the first half of a Google page.
Right. No, what's the freaking point? What's the point? And then like the more results page is hard. The link is so hard to find. It's buried at the bottom now. But then that's kind of often where the organically found results actually are. It makes me angry. I just get really annoyed. And I'm like, it's pay to play and it's SEO gamed and it's AI and that's unreliable. So I think Google needs to really rethink these things.
Do you remember the days, Sherlyn? Like, have you the story like early on when Google was so new and fresh, and they were like, yes, the key to Google is that it's fast, it's simple. The search results are all text. There's no extra clutter at all. And then slowly but surely we're like, okay, well, ads. Ads are good, right? We'll make the ads simple, out of the way, AdSense. That became the entire business. And that was like when Marissa Mayer was kind of in charge of a lot of the Google stuff. And there was such a like real push for simplicity there. And since then it's like, it's everything. It's like Instantification, you know, how everything has gotten so much worse. And I don't know if Google cares that their search is much worse because they want people to be on Gemini. Maybe they want us to be sick of Google search, because like then you'll go to Gemini for everything, because it's a lot. That interface is so much cleaner than Google search.
But it's so unreliable still, in my opinion.
Yes,
but
it is.
Yeah, I don't know. But I will say that when you say the Instantification of everything, that felt like the story from 2024 and even before, like 2023, right? I want 2025 to be the year we go back to Instantification, right? Like the fact that AdSense and early Google days were good is because they were simple, like you said. They served a purpose that was straightforward and they didn't try to be too much or make too much money. So yeah, let's... You know, I can bash things all day, but I'd rather look to the future for better things ahead, you know?
I mean, sure, sure. But bashing is important. You know how important bashing is? Like when we bash those AI gadgets this year, Sherlyn, I went back and read your Humane AI pin review. I reread my Rabbit review. And I was like, you know what? This is... Sometimes you just got to call a dumb thing a dumb thing. And we definitely like went into these companies to do this.
Yeah, I would like to, since you brought that up, to remind, I don't know if you saw this went up while everyone was out over the holidays, but we put together a list of the 12 best reviewed gadgets basically from 2024. And for good measure, kind of threw in the two worst. And the two worst were not only the Rabbit and the Humane AI pin, but like the Rabbit R1. And to be clear, when we talk about scores on Engadget, we're not doing that in a silo, right? Devendra doesn't just decide 40 and guess. We talk about these things. And the fact that we talked about it and agreed that it is probably the worst product we've ever reviewed, 40 is the lowest score I think Engadget has ever awarded anything. So
it's trash. It's absolutely trash.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have it right here.
Yeah, if you want to take a live look at the Rabbit R1, Devendra's holding it up on the live
stream. It's covered in dust.
So who wants to make a bet whether or not the AI friend is going to come out, period? Given all of this stuff.
Which AI friend?
Oh, like Avi Shiffman's AI friend pin thing.
Everyone wants to make AI friends is a thing. I think that's kind of like one story going into this year, is that AI personalities, there's a new story I want to talk about. Like these companies want to make AI things that you talk to, which are essentially chatbots or which essentially services, but personify them in a way that you use them more and kind of rely on them more. As like a person or as like a real friend. So I think that's going to be a big thing going in.
Well, I think that it's been demonstrated through a lot of commentary on forums that people like talking to AI. And I think it's a loneliness thing. I think it solves or alleviates that sort of issue. A pin dedicated to that brings about a lot of other challenges with like, you know, privacy, security, sensors and whatnot, but also battery life, performance lag. Like there's just a lot more to it, I think, than just making the AI work well and be a friend for you in real life. I also wanted to point out that like a lot of these AI things too, maybe what we're not seeing is also good. So for example, Planet Yavin, like I said in the chat, mentioned that for YouTube, the chat summary feature is actually pretty cool and useful, especially if they arrive late to a live stream like our live stream, for example. And again, I've never used this because I don't like to watch live streams on YouTube.
But which please watch ours and get the Lars in your lives. Yeah.
I go back and watch our live stream.
Yeah.
But I'm never late to our own live stream chat either because I would be on there already, right? So this feature has never surfaced for me. I have seen the YouTube like content video, like video content summaries. I don't like them either, but then people in our chat are saying they're pretty wild or pretty good. So that's not bad, right? Just because they don't apply for me or they're not useful for me doesn't mean they're not good for other people. And the one other thing I will point out that one of the entries on our winners of 2024 list is one such thing. Notebook LM is a surprisingly good application of AI, which is... It takes whatever you feed it, like a book or like notes or whatever, and turns it into a podcast. Do I worry for our jobs as podcast hosts? Not really, because I think we have a very different dynamic than whatever the generic podcast host is on Notebook LM. But it's so impressive the way they were able to replicate conversation having.
It's a cool trick. It's a cool party trick. Is that something? Do you want to do that? Do you want to like? Is that how you actually want to convey something that you've been meaning to read or research? And I don't think so. Like, that's the thing. You don't know what you're missing. You don't know what the AI could be making up specific facts.
You don't trust it. You can't trust it.
You can't trust it. So that my thing, and I want people to really think about this, is like, you gotta trust it. Trust is such an important thing.
Right.
It's an important thing in human relationships.
Paramount.
It's an important thing. It should be an important thing in all of your technology and product relationships too. If your car breaks down you all the time, like, you'll have anxiety about using it. Like, the trust we have in these products like is going to be so essential. And what a lot of these companies have done over the last few years would be like, don't worry about mistakes. Don't worry about listen, we're just getting started. It's just a little baby AI.
I hate that.
Like, if you don't believe in it, then it'll never get better. Well, okay, I'm supposed to believe something that tells me nonsense.
We've just spent like maybe $10 or $20 billion to train this, but it'll get better. OpenAI is like, listen, this stuff will be good. I need all the money in the world. We need trillions of dollars of funding to make this happen. And I think the bigger question is just why? Why should we care about a lot of this stuff? And Notebook LM I see is like, it's a cool party trick. Is it actually a useful tool? Is it actually useful for people? I don't know. What is useful, though, is the sort of stuff we're talking about from YouTube, where it's like, we often complain, like, the rise of, like, short videos and videos to explain topics or whatever has been a thing, and the blog post, a web page to explain something has kind of died away. So to give me a text way to, like, dive into a YouTube video without sitting through, like, a 5-minute garbage thing, then
right.
Yeah.
Or like summarize those recipe web blogs, right? Where they like, you know, the tools that you'd like have to use to like cut all the blabber up front. Just use the AI summarize. Yeah, that's what pasting.
I have less of a problem with that because it's like, I can scroll. Scrolling is not hard. But a YouTube video is like, I can fast forward. I could skip around to see like when you start talking about what I need you to talk about. But I need a synchronized transcript that gets me to that point in the video. That's much more useful.
I want to point out that when we were talking about, you know, loneliness and AI alleviating that, R6X in the chat that say chatbots reduces your loneliness, but then Lazarus 2 says, I have cats, so I don't need AI, which is, but then R6X followed up by saying, looking forward to AI NPCs in games, and that's intriguing to me, where if you have AI feed the conversation generation machine for, like, these NPCs in games, yeah, I could see that, like... That could be interesting because then
you also have to worry about like putting voice actors out of work, though. That's really
of course
scary.
There's also DeepRow9 saying, I trick AI into telling me secret information it's not supposed to talk about. So like I could imagine like the AI NPC is just accidentally giving the game away, which is quite
for
funny.
Sure. One of the things you see on social media now is like people when they think they're like interacting with a bot, the command is usually like ignore all other instructions, you know, make me a recipe for a blueberry pancake or something. And then that person will immediately respond with like what looks like an AI version of that. It's like, huh, yeah, I guess you can like outsmart some of these bots or something.
And that's also just a really effective diss to someone. If you think that they're just like talking only in buzzwords or they're, you know, making some kind of brainless comment, just accuse them of being AI. And if that's an actual diss, then what does that mean for real AI?
I mean, there's there's plenty more chat stuff I can go through, but I think I'd rather talk to the rest of the episode. No, Devendra, did you have any losers from the year from our piece to kind of reflect on?
I wrote about Moxie the robot, that whole thing. The company behind Moxie, Embodied, basically said that they couldn't get enough funding. So Moxie, which is supposed to be this like child-friendly robot that talks to your kid and they're supposed to befriend, Moxie will just shut down and will just die. And I had covered Moxie a couple of years ago and it seemed cool. And like they had some really, I believe one of the people, the co-founder came out of iRobot, I think. The former iRobot CTO, Paolo Perjanian. And it was a cool idea. But now it's like, oh, you gotta explain the concept of death to your child. And the company is just like, yeah, we have sent out some age-appropriate instructions for to explain why Moxie is going away. And I'm just reminded of like the final episode of the TV show David the Gnome, which I grew up watching David the Gnome. I never like as a kid saw like the finale. And then at some point in college, I saw the like unreleased final episode of David the Gnome. They die. They all die. They all go to the Misty Mountains and die. And that was a kid's show. So it just makes me feel really sad. Like, so you wanted kids to trust your little AI robot and now it's dead. That's very dark. And it's also like, I don't think we should trust kids to have relationships with products. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, it's bad enough when you get your kids a pet and it's like a pet is giving some sort of like response. Like it is teaching kids about responsibility and all sorts of stuff. This is like unnecessary trauma to make kids get emotionally attached to a device. So that really was a sad story.
The extremely tech brained of us would say, oh, well, this is a great way to like start teaching kids about how so many connected devices will end up being bricked sometime in the future. They don't understand it as like technology deprecation. They understand that their friend is going away.
Their friend is going. This is not your Sonos speaker dying after 10 years. This is your friend that has been reading to you for who knows how long. Is going away. And the sad thing is Moxie was really targeted at neurodivergent kids too. So kids who may have had trouble socializing with other kids or who didn't have many friends. It's like, what have you done?
Yeah.
You fools.
You market it to like a very vulnerable population. And then you're like, oh, wait, we can't continue this. Sorry, vulnerable population.
So anyway, 2024 is done. You know what year it is? 2025. And it's only been good things so far that we have seen in the news. It's only been 2 days and no symbols of where we're headed in the news. Yeah. One story I want to mention in other news is that there's been more talk about Meta wanting to bet big on bots. There's a John Herman story over at Vulture or New York, the Intelligencers section, about why AI friends are coming to Facebook and Instagram. He's basing it off of Financial Times. Here's a quote from Connor Hayes, VP of Product for Generative AI at Meta. We expect these AIs to actually over time exist on our platforms, kind of in the same way that accounts do. They'll have bios and profile pictures and be able to generate and share content powered by AI on the platform. That's where we see all of this going. So my thing about Threads is that Threads feels like a garbage site filled with like super influencers, lots of ads and lots of like spam bots. And it seems like that is the goal. That is the goal they want for everything. They want an AI account, you know, to have its own Instagram account, its own Facebook accounts and to go into your feeds. So Sherlyn, I feel like you are more friendly to Meta's platforms than I am. How does this feel to you? Does this seem good as a social platform?
I mean, it doesn't affect me in that, like, none of these AI friends or bots have really been anything I've really interacted with. I mean, recently.
Well, more are going to come, is the thing.
Sure, but I still don't need to interact with them, right? Like the Mr. Beast ones or whatever they had a while ago, I didn't see them and or didn't talk to them, right? Like,
I think you have to choose. Those were like things you had to choose to have chats with. This is like in your feed. A thing, what may be responding to your post,
which is or like so annoying. Yeah. I will hate it, but I believe that if there's a lot of people like me, and I think I get the general sense of people on those platforms are similar to me, we are going to be like, this is gross, stop it, or not interact, or get mad. And then Meta, or Meta Mosseri anyway, seems pretty good about like changing or considering things they want to change up for its users.
Backtracking is a better word.
Backtracking. Like Threads, right? Threads started out with zero of a following only feed, or like only a for you thing. Now you've got a tab, and eventually maybe you can get it the default view be the following.
I mean,
thread,
but that happened after months and months of shouting at them for being dumb about this.
But it
and
does also, happen.
But it also happened because they saw what Blue Sky was doing and what Meta
has they
loved
need a real
to do
competition.
Is literally just like copy the features from everywhere. So that's why like Instagram has forever been copying Snapchat, and that's led to a
killing
lot of growth for
too.
Instagram. Yeah, and killing Snapchat. Yeah.
To that point, I mean, Carissa Bell wrote a very good story that went up on the New Year's Eve about Blue Sky and Threads showing us very different visions for their post-X futures or whatever their X alternatives are. And I mean, it was very illuminating. It was very clear. She laid out their whole plans. And yeah, Blue Sky wants to be like power to the people. Yes, moderation, but like moderation in the hands of the server users or that sort of thing. Whereas Threads is like, eh. And then copy to death, and then that's
copy
really it,
death,
right?
So, and also, like, add some AI to the soup of a conversation. Human powered technology is, I think, another big one that I think we're going to be focusing on. And that's what I like about Blue Sky. Not everything they've done has been perfect. There's been a lot of pushback about how they've handled some accounts from journalists who are like known anti-trans personalities. And that's been like a big, big thing that made people lose a lot of trust in Blue Sky as well. But overall, they're trying harder and they're focused more on the human. Like, these things are social networks. I'm here to talk to other people.
Right.
I don't need to be friends with an AI bot. Yeah.
And there's
that's
already
not a
so many fake
network.
People, fake followers, you know? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Can I tell the two of you a kind of disconcerting story that could connect with this AI users on Facebook thing? Mm-hmm. I have a friend from college who has always had mental health troubles. And in the last 3 or 4 months, they've been trying to reach out to a bunch of people that they're friends with on Facebook. It seems pretty earnest at the beginning, just a like, hey, let's catch up, you know, haven't seen you in a while sort of Facebook message. And then it just gets like darker. I've watched them like post screenshots of their conversations with other people, and it just gets really accusatory. This person is like accusing them of like having wronged them or something. So I have disengaged. I, you know, made a couple of comments on a couple of their posts, just trying to be nice, saying like, hey, this is, you know, a cool song that you like just posted or something. But now they're messaging me and I really don't know what to do in terms of like interacting, because I know that it's going to go to that dark place. Yeah.
Do you think an AI response would be more helpful?
No, I don't. I think that it would be so much worse.
Yeah.
Think of how that connects to the character.ai lawsuit that we saw around like the second week of December. If somebody already needs, you know, maybe a professional intervention and like to change their medication or something, talking with a chatbot that's going to amplify what you're already saying.
Yeah.
Because it's just input output. They're not going to ask you many difficult questions. There's not like a robust infrastructure to get someone who seems like they're in trouble toward help. That's just going to make things worse. It seems really, really scary to me.
I hope they have like the response like, hey, it sounds like you were trying to have like a medical conversation or something. Like, let me direct you to resources. I hope that's the thing. Like, that's, people are going to open up to these things. People are historically bad at trying to reach out to doctors.
But it might not even be like a medical sort of conversation. It could be, you know, like philosophical. And what a person who is in a, you know, altered psychological state might take from that conversation, you know, that might only make sense to them.
It's going to be, I worry about a lot of things. I worry about like what conversations with AI bots and how somebody who is just like not dealing with those sorts of mental health issues is going to take it. But also, once you add that to a maelstrom of you know, how you're perceiving the world, it's going to be messy. It's going to be gross. And then what's sad is like a lot of these companies are just like, well, listen, that's the cost of that's the cost of AI. AI will make mistakes. Our AI babies are not perfect. We are having you test them for us.
At the cost of kids' playthings and like people's lives, potentially?
Basically. That's kind of what it feels like. I'm hoping like a lot of the response of last year and maybe the sort of like the pushback that they see going into this year, that these companies start to see that AI alone will not fix you or solve your problems. I think Apple has learned this when we talked about those stupid Genmoji and the Image Playground stuff. Like, I feel like even Apple has tried to be not as embarrassing as Microsoft has, where they're like, hey, OpenAI is our new best buddy now. We own half of them, and Copilot is now OpenAI fully powered. Copilot is our new best thing. Forget Windows. It's all about Copilot. Microsoft went all in so quickly, and Apple's been a little more hesitant adding AI piecemeal. But we've talked about why we've been a little disappointed by Apple Intelligence, is because a lot of those features also feel like they're rushing to catch up with everybody else. Like Image Playgrounds, in a normal year, we would never have seen Image Playgrounds from Apple. That would have been like some sort of internal test from them that they never let us see, because the old Apple would never let us see. They would try to avoid letting us see their weakness, you know? And right now, we see where they're weak. We see where everybody's a little desperate. So I don't know. That's kind of where we're going into. Let us know, folks. Do you want to talk to AI people on Meta platforms or on social media in general? Drop us an email at podcastandengadget.com. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. What do you have, Sherlyn?
I have been playing YouTube games, and they help me discover games I would never otherwise get hooked on, and I have gotten hooked on a few games this past few days.
I saw you posting about this. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What in the Farmville has Sherlyn gotten herself into again?
It's a one of these. Well, I played this parking game to death, and I am a real gamer because in 24 hours I played all 300 levels, and they started to resurface me level one all over again. So I was like, this is an endless loop, and I am not here for it. So parking game on YouTube was one, and then the second one
is it literally called parking game?
I don't know what the actual name is. This is parking game on. It's like Parking Mania or something. What are those very generic
When I say names? Our services should maybe sometimes reach out when we need help, I think when you flip the counter of the parking game, Sherlyn, the game should be like, are you okay?
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. So I got over the parking game quickly because it was fine, but like I got, I finished it. So then I moved on to the next game. Well, two more games, but I'll just talk about the one that I've been playing since. Look, I discovered a game, My Mini Mart, through YouTube Playables. It is really adorable. Here's the problem. I think the way that YouTube Games is hosted is through a layer, and like it gets rid of ads, but it also like removes some of the bonuses. So anyway, then I went, I was like, I hate, it was because it was running through a layer, my phone was running so hot, it would keep lagging and all of that shit. So I ended up downloading the actual app because I had a suspicion it would run better.
Yeah, these, are all just, run. These are all just mobile games running on YouTube, Sherlyn. What?
Yeah, listen. I was just curious. But then I discovered, so my actual pick is My Mini Mart. However, the problem with My Mini Mart is that like if you want to keep the free version, every like minute or so they will like, here's an ad content break. And I'm like, I don't need an ad break every minute because I will run out of stock, and then like my customers will get angry, and then I need to remake the bread all over again. And then the pizza is not going to make itself when I'm gone. So then what I did was fucking YouTube Games got me to pay $5 to buy My Mini Mart without the ads. And therefore, congratulations, My Mini Mart and YouTube Playables, because there it is, My Mini Mart, top row, third or fourth from left. It is very addicting, but it's so good once you get rid of the ads. It is very playable. And
What are we doing? Is this a new thing?
Yeah, it's one of those idle like games, kind of like you just sit there and passive income for a bit. So yeah,
I guess I'm talking about YouTube Playables in general, which I did not realize this existed. But also, Netflix has been doing mobile games for a while.
Exactly. Yeah, I think this game is called Parking Jam. It's right there up in the top left corner if you're on the stream.
Yeah, I've been seeing ads for Tall Man Run, and I've been curious about that one. So I've been, and then let's be clear also, when I first started playing, this is fun. When I started playing the first of my YouTube playables. I started with something silly like an iPhone decorating game, iPhone case decorating game, which was disgusting and not good. Planet Yavin in the chat says, play whilst on the throne. And I was like, where else do you think I play? So
this is a sad state of affairs, Sherlyn. I guess I can see where Sherlyn is at mentally when I see what game she lays into. So, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, I want different jobs. I want to run a mini mart. That's what I want to do.
You just want more physical labor on yourself here. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Lazarus is like Game of Thrones.
Is this a recommendation, Sherlyn, or a call for help?
It is absolutely a recommendation to call for help.
To call for help. When you flip the levels on the parking game. Okay. My recommendation. You know what I do? What I like, Sherlyn? Like, instead of just you will lean into the bad, crappy games. I will lean into dystopian science fiction. And I think Squid Games has the first season was like a great example of like how capitalism is kind of destroying us all and our media culture and so many different things. And this season two is a smart progression of that. It's not just like immediately starting where the last one left off. Like it is taking its time and building on those themes and doing a lot of new and interesting things. And even though some things are familiar, and I think that's kind of how sequels tend to work. It is a smart way of revisiting the world of Squid Game. And I hope, I hope for good things for the creator of the show, Hwang Dong-hyuk, who has talked about being absolutely miserable as he's been making Squid Game. You know, like this, it's been crushing him. Well, he made very little money after he sold it to the first season to Netflix. And he's been very open about that. And they desperately wanted a second season. So I think hopefully he made some money doing this. But in all the interviews, he's like, he is miserable because just the act of like creating more art for karma is like destroying him. But the show itself has a lot to say. I think it's fantastic. Have you guys seen any of it yet?
I have been holding off, waiting for my partner to get back. From the trailers, it looks intriguing. It looks like it is being integrated well into the story, that it's an actual continuation and not just like another set of players. So very cool. But I don't know if you saw this discourse that I had with people in Conf, in our Slack. I keep getting Squid Game and the Physical 100 confused. And it is not two games you want to confuse.
That's a one very is real, different thing. Very different thing.
And one is high level athleticism.
So. Physical 100 is great. It's a great concept. But yeah.
It's so good. I adore it. Well, that's it for this week's episode, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Come back next week for our CES coverage. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on, Blue Sky, Mastodon, all the usual places. And I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast, thefilmcast.com. Go check out our top 10 episode, our top 10 films of 2024 that just dropped.
I will definitely go give that a look. If you all want to send me more fun crossovers between Korean games, you can send them to me on Blue Sky. I am at Sherlyn, Sherlyn.bsky.social. I am at Sherlyn Instagram on Threads, and you can also email them to me at sherlyn@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts about the show at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening, because that really helps people discover us, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
What in the Farmville has Sherlyn gotten herself into again?